Jope and the Bulldog.
I don't think Michael's ever done drugs.
It's Mike Jope.
I don't know if anyone's ever offered him any.
Let's go over some of the symptoms of marijuana use, shall we? You tell me who this sounds like.
It's the Bulldog.
Slow moving. Inattentive. Dull. Constantly snacking. Shows a lack of motivation.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
How about that a Garnet was traded today in hockey? Garnet Hathaway.
Yep.
Third Garnet, well, at least in NHL history. My daughter's name is Garnet. And there was a Garnet Exelby.
I remember him.
And then Ace Bailey. There have been two Ace Baileys.
Garnet Ace Bailey, yeah.
Garnet Bailey, Ace Bailey, who died in the towers. He was on the plane on 9/11. He was a scout, I believe, going from Boston to L.A. That flight was Boston to L.A., Garnet Bailey. I don't know if anybody called him Garnet, but I like that I have hockey cards of his with...
All right.
I think his name appears somewhere. So Garnet Hathaway, Flyers to Panthers? Is that what it was?
Correct.
Yeah, because did he demand a trade to the Panthers?
Because the Panthers, yeah, he was on the Olympic team too. You didn't see him. He didn't play a lot. I'm kidding. They needed to get tougher, Florida. They needed some beef.
So they, sure, that's the one thing we all know about.
Garnet Hathaway is the guy that a lot of Sabres fans will tell you ruined Dylan Cousins.
Okay, that's the guy.
That was the fight that Cousins seemed like he was never the same after.
Well, maybe I'm not so happy with this guy anymore, despite his name. With us now on the Western Hotline is Stephen Ellis. Daily Faceoff, the draft this weekend here in Buffalo. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for taking the time today. How are you?
I'm great. You know, I'm in the city now. It's been a kind of a hectic day with some media interviews, not so great weather, but it's already a good start, I'd say.
I don't have to ask you my first question then, which is, are you coming?
Are you here yet? Yeah, right.
You've answered that already, so we're off to a good start.
And it's clearing up, so we'll be okay here, I think.
Yeah, it should be a nice weekend. Yeah.
I see the sun. That's a good sign.
Right. That's good. We'll take it. So here are the Sabres. We've been joking for the last few days, since the Byram trade, I guess. It's only a couple of days ago, but... how our Paul Hamilton was at the combine, and we're all sort of like, well, it's different. We're not in the top 10 like usual anymore, or top one. It's happened a couple times. You know, it may be different to cover the prospects. And then we went back to Paul yesterday, and he said, well, I did talk to, it sounded like the top six names. He did spend, he just didn't have the Sabres in mind when doing so. What do you think about the top half dozen players here in this draft, especially now that the Sabres, at least for the moment, are in a position to pick one of them?
Yeah, obviously, you know, it's going to be pretty popular, assuming they keep that pick, which, given the drafts in Buffalo, I just going to keep that pick, but we'll see kind of what happens there. But this strong top 10, I think a lot has been made about whether or not draft in as a whole, I'd say kind of the top 10 is good. After that, it starts to fall off a little bit. So getting in... picking number four, whether it be, you know, the top defenseman of the draft and Chase Reed, whether it be one of the other high-end defensemen like Carson Carls or Berhoff, Albert Smith, or maybe go for the best center, Viggo Bjork, outside of Caleb Malhotra, who we kind of expect will go number three. I think they've got some good options here. So, you know, this is quite an exciting time. Yeah, it's going to be probably Buffalo's top prospect immediately, I'd say, kind of depending on who they get. But it's a good spot to be in.
Yeah. How do you view the top two? It seems like, you know, the betting markets are telling you it's going to be McKenna. But, you know, it feels like for the first time maybe in a while there was a little more uncertainty. You know, Stenberg is an attractive prospect. How do you differentiate those two top guys? Not that the Sabres are going to have a look at either of them. Unless they swing a trade with San Jose. Who knows? But the top two, Stephen.
I think when you look at McKenna, you see that high-end skill. He's just so good at the puck. He's such a high-end thinker. And the comparables that have been thrown around are the Nikita Kucherovs and the Patrick Kanes. And I'm not saying he's a one-to-one to those guys, but the way he crosses his plays at speed, the way he moves around the ice, the way he takes advantage of open space and creates high-quality plays consistently as a playmaker, I think we're talking about a guy who's going to put up a ton of points and makes the most sense a number one in Toronto. And he also did say today he's looking forward to being a villain in Buffalo. So there's that. And then when you look at number two with Ivar Stenberg, you know, I think it always, San Jose, it always felt like that was a good fit for him. But at the same time, you know, it's close between him and Chase Reed, and Chase Reed made the most sense until they went and got that ninth overall pick. And then all of a sudden now it looks like number two, you know, Stenberg makes a ton of sense. He can replace, we can replace Eklund, be a very key player there. He's a good play driver, good two-way guy. He's more of a well-rounded player compared to someone like McKenna. But I think, you know, might not have the same hockey sense or pure raw skill, but we're still talking about a guy who is a top prospect and I think is going to put up a ton of points in the NHL. And I think there's a lot worse opportunities for a winger than playing with a guy like Macklin Celebrini.
What do you, having said all that, let me ask you anyway, Steven, what do you think San Jose's appetite might be to trade out of two? Is it such that moving down a spot or two could appeal to them? Of course, Buffalo at four is a reason why I'm asking this. Do you think, given what you said about their trade and everything, they'd be close to that?
You know, it's been interesting because, you know, Mike Greer from the start has said they're going to be listening to trade offers. And that implies, you know, they might be willing to move on from that second overall pick. That being said, we don't really typically see teams move up like one or two spots this high in the draft. So I don't really see it happening. Would it maybe make a lot of sense for Buffalo? Sure. I guess it also depends on what else you'd be throwing out there. Would San Jose be happy with that fourth pick? I'd say they'd be pretty happy too. They still get Chase Reed, but I think when they went out and got that ninth overall pick, I think that really opened up the opportunity for them to still get a defenseman. So I just don't know if there's really a need for them to move down at this
right.
point.
Yeah, that other pick is a big factor in that too, probably. So,
right. So how ready are Stenberg and McKenna guys you think will play in the league next year? And are they the only ones in this class? Again, I'm asking from the fourth pick's perspective, which the Sabres currently hold, because they've got some holes to fill now, but I kind of doubt that even picking fourth, they're going to get someone who can play in the NHL next year.
Well, you know, what kind of makes a player NHL ready, I think, has kind of changed a little bit now with the NCAA rulings allowing CHL players, because for some guys, they would have no reason to go back to the CHL, and the only other option was to go to the NHL. Like, imagine if Zane Parekh had the opportunity to go to college instead of kind of watching the Calgary Flames all year long. I think that would have been huge for his development. So, you know, Chase Reed, he's got a commitment to Michigan State. I'd say there's an argument that he could go out there and challenge for an NHL role, but I think they're going to be patient with him. So then you're looking at Gavin McKenna. I think he's got nothing left to prove in college. Ivar Stenberg, I think, has the skill to play top six pretty quickly as soon as he goes to San Jose. Like, watching him play at the World Championship alongside Viggo Bjork and Lucas Raymond, and you see a lot of Lucas Raymond in the way Stenberg plays, and I'd say a lot of that time he was better than Raymond. I'm not saying he's going to go out there and also be, you know, a star player right away, but I think he's got the hockey sense, and I think he's got the two-way game that he plays so mature already that I think he actually would be able to make the NHL right away. Beyond that, a lot of people have questioned him about Albert Smith. So I think I'd rather see him in a full year in AHL instead, trying to get a ton of minutes and not rush him, because he played at the World Championships, played at the World Juniors, he played at the Olympics, he played in Finland, he played finished U20 hockey, he played in Germany. Like, that's a lot of movement. I would like for him to have a bit of consistency, play one level, and just kind of go from there. I think the AHL would be a good spot for him. You can call him up for maybe a couple games if you need, but I feel very confident about two. But if you learned anything from last year's draft, there's going to be at least one guy that nobody expects to make the NHL right away, and they're going to do it. Like, last year was Ben Kindle, so I think we're going to see probably maybe four or five guys start the year in the NHL, but realistically, I think two are going to stick around.
We had Zach Benson do that three seasons ago.
Right.
Picked later on. I mean, what, 10th?
13.
Even later than 10th?
Yeah.
With Steven Ellis at...
I had him at number six that year, by the way. I think that was a steal of a pick. 100% of a steal.
Let's remember that for a minute here, because, and from talking to Kevin Adams about it in the past, that's the old days when teams went to the draft, and there is the Sabres table, and we may have talked with you and certainly other people just sort of leading up to that pick, and when they were on the clock, they showed the table, there's the owner, there's Adams, the scouts, 10 or 12 or more people, and nobody was even talking. Like, they all just sat there and right. enjoyed their 10 minutes of fame or whatever.
We were going to enjoy what just dropped
Benson
in our lap.
And I asked Adams once, like, you knew Benson the whole time, right? You might have even been hoping picks ahead of that. And he's like, absolutely. We didn't have to have a conversation in that moment because it was obvious what they wanted to do. That's looking pretty good right now. As on the occasion here as we speak, Steven, as he's just signed for almost $50 million last night.
Yeah, and you know, you watch what he did in the playoffs and how much fun it was. And like, I come from the Toronto area, but everyone there was still talking about what Zach Benson was doing and how exciting he was. And we knew he could play this aggressive in your face style, but we didn't see it at the level that we saw now back when he was playing in the WHL. And to see what he's been able to do, it's been so much fun. He's kind of the smaller player archetype that everyone's looking to emulate. You look at a guy like Viggo Bjork in this year's draft. He could be one of the guys the Sabres end up taking at number four. He's a very exciting Swedish guy, 5'9", but he's out there knocking dudes down like it's nothing. Like watching him play the World Championship, and he was out there battling Ryan O'Reilly and Evan Bouchard and Darnell Nurse and physically, you know, overpowering them, was very impressive. And then you see a guy like Zach Benson doing it at the same time at the NHL playoffs. Like, this is a guy that is going to be so much fun to watch. He's had the jersey number switch, and it was fun watching the playoffs, see the two different jersey numbers in the crowd for Benson over his career. But that's a guy that's easy to like, and I kind of want all smaller players to try and emulate his game.
Stephen Ellis from Daily Faceoff on the West Tour Hotline. He's in town preparing to cover the NHL draft, which kicks off tomorrow night at KeyBank Center. How about this pool? You've mentioned a few of the defensemen, the German guy Smits just now. You've mentioned Reed. I've been sort of interested in Verhoef out of North Dakota. Talk about those guys and how similar they are and different. I assume if you're a defenseman in these days, in this current age, being projected to go in the top 10, you're a good to great skater and puck mover, because that is what is mostly required. But just talk about that group of guys if you want, and go deeper than those three if you want.
Well, so Chase Reed, he's the guy that's the best skater. I'd say he's the best overall defenseman, the guy that checks the most boxes as a potential number one defenseman. He's smart, good two-way game. He plays physical, and you can look at his numbers this year in the OHL and say, like, that's nothing really to get excited about. But the reality was, this was a guy that had to do so much of the heavy lifting with the Sioux Greyhounds. And if you watched him at the World Juniors, when Cole Hutson got hurt, he took over and looked really good there. So I do like Chase Reed. Carson Carls, he's this workhorse, this guy that comes from a farm family, and you see it in his work ethic. He's out there out-muscling guys that are bigger than him. He has a lot of muscle himself, but he seems fearless, a good puck mover, a lot of fun to watch, and a guy that I think is closer to being the best defenseman in the draft than the third best defenseman. I think in terms of that third best defenseman, whether it be Verhoef, who I think is at the highest ceiling, but maybe the most flaws in his game right now in terms of his skating and his hockey sense, I think those are two things that are very manageable. And I think he's going to be a very good defenseman. He was a 17-year-old playing college this year. That's very difficult for anybody that age to be able to do it, especially as a defenseman, but he looked really good. You look at Jackson Rudolph, might be the most offensive mind. He's a ton of fun, maybe a bit. He could struggle a bit in his own zone, being a little bit too passive, but I think with the puck, you're not going to find a better defenseman this year's draft. And then there's Albert Smith, who he's most, you know, physically mature at this point. You watch him, he kind of reminds you of Moritz Seider in the way that he defends, the way he joins in on the rush. He's got a big 6'3" frame. He's extremely confident in himself, and I love that. So it's a really good defensive group. You've got Ryan, who's small but speedy, skilled. You got Malson Gustafsson, who's huge and defends well, maybe not the greatest offensive threat. I think it's a really good year to need a defenseman.
Steven, the big question here is whether the Sabres will even keep this pick. There are reports today, some of the insider guys are predicting or reporting that Pierre LeBrun, for one, that most teams apparently that he's talking to think the Sabres will trade this pick. And it does make some logical sense with the kind of year that they had, and now they've lost Byram and Tuck. If they could turn this into a star, then, you know, maybe they'll be so inclined. Do you have a thought on that? And thinking about these defensemen that Bulldog just asked about, I wonder if you think it would be the wrong move, given the makeup of the team, even with Byram having left, to pick a defenseman there, because it might be that that's the right choice by value.
Yeah, I think when you look at this year, like obviously when you're picking, you're making a pick at home, there is a marketing value in picking high. There is value. Like in Montreal, when they dropped their first overall in 2022, and that was a big deal in the city, and obviously this isn't the first overall pick, but if you pick at four, like, there's definitely a marketing value. Hey, you've got a star player. You're potentially, if you get Chase Reed, a number one defenseman, a guy that could be a real play driver on the point that you're really looking for. Like, that would be hard to kind of sell. You got to get a really good value there, which I also would partly argue that pick might be one of those valuable picks in the draft because of, you know, the attachment of where the draft is held. Mm-hmm. that could be something that, you know, Buffalo uses as premium leverage. Like, hey, if you want this pick, if you want that bad, this is what it means to us. You're going to have to make a move there. Then you talk about it for a different position, like maybe take a guy like Diego Bjork. I think that's like the only guy you would probably take if you're not getting a defenseman, assuming Caleb Holter's off the board at that point. If Caleb Holter's there, that gets interesting because he's got potential number one center abilities there. And at worst, he could be a number two, a very good number two. But if it came down to me, if it's Chase Reed or Viggo Bjork, I'd be taking Chase Reed because you're getting the best value guy, you're getting the best defenseman, and you're getting a guy, you know, right-handed defenseman that move as well as he does. That's hard to find, and that's a guy you definitely want.
Is Malhotra to Vancouver in ink for you with his dad now being their coach or no?
See, for me, I wouldn't personally do it, but then everybody I talk to, scouts and teams, everything, they keep telling me, like, they see it being Malhotra. So we'll see. I think there's a equal of an argument that they could use a guy like Chase Reed. But when it comes to Malhotra, he's a smart center, a strong center, great two-way guy. If you're in the beginning of the rebuild like they are when they need everything, that's a good guy you could build around. I think maybe they just overlook the fact that it is, you know, the coach's son and just say, hey, we're taking the best player available because it is – like you can want, some people might call it a nepotism pick if that's what happens. I don't see it that way. I see them picking the best center of the draft, and that would be something you could easily defend if you're the Vancouver Canucks.
What's tricky there is I'm not sure I would even think of it as a positive. I mean, what kind of a commitment, what kind of an added commitment am I making to my new coach on a terrible team?
If I'm picking his
kid. If I just picked his son, like, do I have to wait out extra bad years, you know, in theory? Because this was the idea that they would be together, and then maybe you lose the kid if the coach is gone by the time he sort of matures to
play
the league.
Not to mention the pressure that's on the kid,
right?
Then, and the dad too, like, to have it all work. I mean, that might be a lot. I mean, I don't know that it's a reason to not take the best player, Steven, but that's a lot in the sidecar there, I think.
And that's why I wouldn't do it personally. I guess my theory here is we know that Manny Malhotra knows how to work with younger players. We saw that in the NHL where he was tasked with bringing the team to the Calder Cup final. They won. I wonder if he's kind of there as a stopgap until they find a guy a few years from now when they're ready to be competitive. Because we know the Canucks are in the rebuild here. They've admitted it as such. I feel like they're kind of treating it as year one. Maybe this is something where they give him 3 years to kind of just work with the young guys, young core, get the most out of them. And then the plan would be to move on and find someone different, find a more veteran voice, find someone new. And that'd be very interesting to see, because we do see, you know, a lot of these teams that have gone to the bottom that will make coaching changes by the time they're competitive. So I do wonder if this is something where it's more of a short-term thing. That being said, you know, yeah, I would hate the pressure of, you know, for, like, if you've got to bench your own son, like, that's going to be tough. But at the same time, I know it's very easy to make jokes about the Vancouver Canucks, given all the off-ice and on-ice stuff we've heard about them the last couple of years. They're still a professional hockey organization run by professional people. It's new voices from what we heard last year. You just kind of have to trust that maybe they'll handle this correctly here, and they'll be able to get the most out of their coach and the most out of Caleb Holter if they pick him. But again, that's the pressure I wouldn't do myself.
See, and if you have time for a couple that are off, they're prospect-y questions, but they're off of this year's class. A lot of our attention here since the Sabres got eliminated, in Game 7 against Montreal has been on, you know, bracing for Tuck leaving and the kids. Like, can we just bank on Osland and Hellenius and even Yuri Kulik, who's coming back after missing mostly the entire year with a blood clot issue. I think our audience would like to hear you talk about maybe all three guys, if you can remember, like, what you thought about them coming out and what they have developed into, and just how bankable any of the three might be to, like, take a big role on a team that, you know, had 109 points last year.
Yeah, when you look at a guy like Constant in particular, he's a guy that a lot of scouts are telling me in his draft year that he was one of the most NHL-ready players. And you saw what he was able to do this year in Rochester. You saw what he was able to do in the playoffs and in the World Championship. Like, that's a really promising way to end the season. I think the World Championship can be overlooked a lot because it's not the best players. But for him to go out there and really kind of force his way to play with Barkov and then not only play well, but be Finland's best player most nights, that's a guy that you got to think is going to be coming in with so much confidence for next year. So I'm really like him. With Osland, you know, I still think he's this great skater, great hands, go to a game. I think you're completely sure what type of player he's going to be, but he's got that skill. He's got that pace. He can drive the play. So I do think there's a lot to like there. I'm a big Rudy Murka fan. I think this is a guy that's, you know, with all the talk about him being involved with the trade of the St. Louis Blues, that would have been a tough blow and a tough hole to fill. But that's a guy that averaged, what, like over 30 minutes a night half the time this year in Seattle and WHL. And that's really difficult for a guy that's, you know, he can play offensively, but that's not necessarily his game. I think he's better at shutting guys down and breaking up plays. So, you know, Buffalo's prospect pool, we're talking about a mid-pack one, but compared to a lot of other contenders that are kind of in the same, you know, points range as them, Buffalo's got one of the better pipelines. So I like what they're doing there. And the fact that that's also partly why I think I'd like to see them keep that fourth overall pick. I know we're talking about the team being a contender now, but Chase Reed might be ready to play a lot of minutes in like 2 years.
Interesting.
That's not too far away. That's the time, like, mm-hmm. hopefully we're talking about their third playoff run in a row. That's what they're going to be aiming for. That's why I kind of like them holding that pick. But they do have a decent pipeline still, obviously not as good as it was, you know, when they're still trying to churn guys out over and over again. But this is a good group.
Last thing, Steven, you mentioned earlier a drop-off at around pick 10. The Sabres made a move earlier this month, I guess, probably, Kesselring, to go from 27 to 20. What was the significance of that move, or is it, to you as you see the board? Like, is 20 significantly different? Is it meaningfully better than 27? Maybe not? What do you think?
A lot of the guys I've got to kind of don't see a huge difference between that. So these guys look like, what, 275 NHL trades ago at this point? But I think when you're looking at, you know, Buffalo, you're probably going to get a guy like Elton Hermanson, who's maybe one of the more skilled forwards in this draft, a good forward. Oliver Savanto, if you want a big center. Adam Novotny would be very interesting, a goal-scoring winger. Like, there is going to be some good options there. Some of those guys might have still been around at 27, but I feel like now they're more likely to get a really solid winger at that pick, and they're going to be pretty happy with it if that's what they end up doing.
If they keep it. His cat writes his tweets. Steven Ellis, if you don't believe me or his bio, there's a picture of a cat, seems to be tweeting, I don't know, going pretty well for you to have a cat so knowledgeable about draft prospects. Nice to have you in Buffalo, Steven. Thanks, as always, for your time today.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys.
Okay, Steven Ellis, Daily Faceoff. Wanted to ask him about covering this event.
Call him back.
Without the tomorrow at 4. Covering this event without the teams here has got to be a drag. I mean, relatively speaking. There's going to be so much, more. All the executives and coaches, like, they're all at the draft before last year, I guess, right? Last year.
Yeah, last year was the first decentralized draft, I think is how they phrase it.
Way worse to host an event this way for, like, the host city if you don't have all those team people.
I think. I mean, it's more like really just a TV show is coming to be shot in your arena.
Think of the Wings.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
20 people thereabouts per team traveling to the draft. 15, whatever. They're all going out for wings.
Yep.
They're in Buffalo for the weekend. That's what they're doing.
It's a lot of business.
That's a lot of wings unsold.
Yeah.
Too bad. Hopefully the show isn't as awkward to watch. I'm not optimistic. I don't know.
I have no idea what to expect. But I'm bracing for weird because it's the NHL, and you know there's always a chance that they're just not going to have it all buttoned up.
Jeremy White on his birthday, 100 holes of golf today. It's that day, raising money for charity every year, and the sun came out, so hopefully it's drying up and not just sloshy on the golf course. We'll get a report from Jeremy, see how he's holding up here as we're pretty far into the day at this point. How many holes do you think? Are we in the 70s?
I saw a tweet, I think, before we started talking to Steven that they were in the tee box at hole number 69.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would think in the 70s. They fly through them pretty fast.
All on foot.
Right.
Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. We'll talk to Jeremy next. Paul Hamilton later on. This is WGR.